go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and 4. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Good afternoon, kids. We welcome you inside the clubhouse, so to speak. John Rutten, Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday. As the Patriots 6-0 get ready to tackle the 0-6 Miami Dolphins this Sunday at Dolphin Stadium in the 1 o'clock Eastern Time kickoff. We'll get the good stuff out of the way right off the bat. Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio@patriots.com. If you've got time for a phone call, I got time to take one. 508-543-7482. That's the number, but as Andy suggested just a couple of moments ago, we are kind of locked and loaded today. Coming up in 10 minutes, Dan Dierdorf from CBS Sports will be joining us, is scheduled to join us at that time. And then in approximately 25 minutes from now, Harvey Green is the Senior Vice President of Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, and he has been a frequent contributor in years past on this program whenever it has been Squish the Fish Week. He's been kind enough to come on and give us his viewpoint, and he's often been brutally honest when it comes to his football team that he works for, that being the Miami Dolphins. And I think we've got some questions to ask him today, like, how come you guys suck? What's going on here? And I know we had a couple of emailers yesterday ask, you know, what are your impressions on why the Dolphins have fallen so far so fast? And I think that's a great question for Harvey Green. And so that'll come up here in about 25 minutes. We'll get that to you. We also have conference calls for later on in the program that we will let you listen in on the Patriots media members visiting with Dolphins head coach Cam Cameron and Dolphins defensive end Jason Taylor, who, by the way, must also be extremely frustrated over what is transpiring with his football team right now. And, of course, as time permits, Bill Belichick a little bit later on in the program. So we've got a full docket. The couple of things that I wanted to kind of get off right off the top here have to do with the fact that, you know, I heard, I don't know, maybe it was a half an hour or so ago when I actually logged on to be able to listen to a little of the program prior to joining the boys. And I guess there was an email or something that came up the extent of it was a little bit too early to get into to Pro Bowl talk. And my guess is that whoever that emailer was didn't quite get the full context of what we were talking about yesterday. Yes, I was asking for some Pro Bowl selections, and I guess my impression was that you thought it was way too early to begin talking about Pro Bowl. Well, again, full context is required here. We started talking about it yesterday because that's when the online voting portion of the program started yesterday. And it's perhaps, and I'm just kind of throwing this out here, but it's perhaps because of attitudes like that, the Patriots players get dissed in the Pro Bowl voting because you wait until too late before it matters. So, you know, some people actually step up and, like, vote for the players that they like and keep voting as much as they can and get those votes in early and often, as the saying goes. And the reason that I brought it up yesterday is, number one, the voting online launched on NFL.com yesterday. Number two, because Patriots fans have always, in recent memory at least, as long as we've been doing this show, have always basically said, how come we don't get any respect when it comes to Pro Bowl voting? Because you don't take the time to do it. That's why, in a nutshell. And so, you know, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, it's way too early to start talking about Pro Bowl. We're 6 games through a 16-game schedule. You know, it's kind of nuts. But, you know, given the fact that it's 0-6 Miami that we're playing this week, okay, and given the fact that, you know, we normally nitpick on Tuesdays over the, you know, little things that we know that really need to be improved with this football team, and I spent majority of yesterday's programming telling you how dominant this Patriots team was and certainly could stack up to be in the all-time annals of NFL history, what the hell else is there? Work with me here a little bit, people, you know? Play along. Even if you don't like it, just humor me for a couple of minutes, shall we? I mean, do we have to really dissect and analyze the 0-6 Miami Dolphins on Tuesday, the 2 days after a 21-point win over what was perceived to have been the best team in the NFC? Cut me a little slack. A little, please. That's what we're here for. We're here to talk about these kinds of things. If you're really into the X's and the O's of trying to, you know, disseminate how the Patriots are going to dissect and analyze the Miami Dolphins themselves, I'm not quite sure that this is your program, and nor do I think PFW in Progress is your program. I mean, we do that. And if you've listened to this show for any amount of time at all over the previous six seasons that we've been on the air here on Patriots.com radio, okay, then you know that we spend a lot of time X-ing and O-ing. In fact, on Thursdays is one of my favorite times when we have Russell Baxter in from ESPN, because that's all we do. We talk about the pluses and the minuses. We talk the X's, the O's, you know, the heretofores and the whys of not only the Patriots and their opponent that week, but we take a look at select games around the NFL that particular week and do the very same thing to those games. You know, and dare I say, we get into a little bit more depth than, Prediction Thursday on PFW in Progress. With all due respect to those guys, they give their picks, and that's great. And they're certainly well-equipped to do that because they've seen these teams play. You know, but Russell Baxter lives, eats, breathes, and sleeps football 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Now, how'd you like to have that job? I think a lot of people would like to have that job. So the point here is that, we do some things, as we say in the intro to this program, and a lot of the fun stuff in between. Well, that's what yesterday was. It was some of the fun stuff in between. You certainly have a right not to participate in any, you know, email question of the day or whatever it is that I throw out there. But, you know, work with me just a little bit here. All right? If you really want the X's and O's, if you really need that, you know, then by all means, you send me a note and you say, John, I need X's and O's. I'm craving X's and O's. Give me, you know, something that I can chew on before next Sunday. And I'll do my very best to get that to you. And I'll also send you the number of a psychiatrist that you can go talk to. Because I don't even think the guys down the hallway at Gillette do that all the time. So, anyway, just food for thought. The latest, in case you just logged in to the program, in terms of players, of course, the physically unable to perform list, after 6 weeks, guys are eligible to come off the list and return to practice if they're healthy. And out at practice earlier today, out on the lower field in behind Gillette Stadium, were wide receiver Chad Jackson and cornerback Eddie Jackson. They both opened the year on the PUP, so they were present, at least for the media portion of practice today. That having been said, of course, now the clock has started on those guys. The Patriots have 21 days to make a decision on whether or not to put both of those Jacksons on the active roster or on season-ending injured reserve. Now, Richard Seymour and Troy Brown, the other players on PUP, were not present, at least for the media portion of practice. Doesn't mean that they're not coming off, but they were not present. So we're led to believe that they're not ready yet. And I mentioned yesterday that there are only 15 of the 32 teams in the NFL who have players on the PUP. And the Patriots were only one of three teams in the entire NFL that had more than one player on PUP. And so that's the update on the physically unable to perform players. And again, time is going to tell. We'll probably know more. At least I would imagine by approximately 4 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon, when the first injury report for the Dolphins game on Sunday comes out, and whether or not either one of those guys are listed. And if they're not, well, again, you've got three more weeks to decide. You've got up to 9 weeks. So you've got three more weeks to decide what you need to do about a player. A player can stay on the PUP again for up to 9 weeks. So you've still got plenty of time here to decide what to do about Seymour and Brown for the rest of this year. But that's the current status with the PUP guys, since today was the first day back at practice after the six-week mark. Also today at practice, Sammy Morris and Benjamin Watson, along with Mel Mitchell, not present for the media access portion of the workout, and thanks to Mike Reese from Boston.com for that little tidbit. Morris apparently, and again ESPN.com, is reporting today, if you hadn't seen this, they're actually quoting a source that the Boston Herald had originally reported. So I guess we should give original contribution here to the Boston Herald on this one. The deal is that Morris hurt the bone connecting the sternum to the clavicle. And again, this is according to the Boston Herald and ESPN.com, which is sort of parroting that today. Apparently, he's in a lot of pain, and he could miss up to a month. That's obviously not very good news for the Patriots, especially because we're not entirely certain what Lawrence Maroney's status is. Now, Maroney was one of those guys, of course, that was out of practice today, at least for the media portion for a short while. So stands to reason that he could be back to play. And that's what we're waiting to find out. So it may be that a guy like Sammy Morris could be out for up to a month. Benjamin Watson also with his injured ankle was not a part of the practice earlier today. So we don't know what the official status is on Watson, and we'll figure that out hopefully by the time the injury report is listed later today. Gary, does that mean we have a guest? Okay, very good. At this time, I'd like to welcome in, and I'm sure you're very familiar with this gentleman, Dan Dierdorf, who calls games on CBS television for the NFL and will be paired up with Greg Gumbel, I believe, this weekend for the Patriots playing at the Miami Dolphins. Dan, thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes of your time with us today.
Not a problem. Glad to do it.
First and foremost, are you of the opinion, like so many other people seem to be who cover the NFL on a full-time basis, that the Patriots are one of the best teams that maybe you've seen in quite some time in the league?
Yes, and that's it started with the offseason they had and knowing the quality of the people that they picked up in Moss and Welker and Stallworth, and I thought Adalis Thomas was clearly one of the 10 best defensive players in the NFL last year. And, you know, you could make an argument maybe he was a top five guy defensively. And to get an addition like that, I thought it was an astonishing offseason for the Patriots, additions to an already really talented roster. Now, I think it's too early for a coronation after six games, but I think if you really follow this league and have followed it for a long time, I think you have to realize that we're looking at a football team that if they finish the way they started is going to be in that three or four teams where you talk about, could this be one of the best teams ever assembled? They have a chance to be that good.
Dan, that's kind of funny you say that, only because I asked our fans yesterday, what is one team in your NFL memory that you remember being as dominant? And you could go back to your childhood days or your earlier adult days and remember those teams that always seemed to be a nemesis. And for me, a dominant team was a team like the 79 Steelers.
Yeah.
I think there was a couple of those 49er teams in the late 80s and even into the early 90s. And I know there are a lot of fans that could go back as far as like the 62 Green Bay Packers. What's
sure.
a dominant team in your memory?
Oh, the 85 Bears, I think you'd have to include in that group because of that that defense of theirs. It was just littered with Pro Bowl and Hall of Fame football players, Dan Hampton and Mike Singletary and on and on and on. Richard Dent, I mean, they were loaded.
You understand that that's a team we try to forget about around here.
Yes, I understand because I know how they finished off their season by winning a Super Bowl. That wasn't this edition of the Patriots. So.
No, that's true.
But that I think if you were if you were going to have five, if you were going to boil it down to your discussion point was going to center around five of the best teams of all time. I think most NFL historians would include the 85 Bears in those top five. And I agree with you. You'd pick one of those Steelers teams. You'd pick one of the 49ers squads from the 80s. You'd maybe have to think about one of the Dallas teams with mm-hmm. Aikman and Smith and Irvin and the great defenses that they had. And then you're right. Go back and grab one of the Packers teams. You know, what galls everyone in Miami is when you have these discussions.
Yeah.
And most people, when they have these discussions, don't include the undefeated Dolphins team, and it just sends everybody in Miami over the edge.
I can understand that. I mean, after all, nobody's ever been able to do that. So why don't we include that team?
Because you look at that team and it was littered with Hall of Fame football players, and mm-hmm. and I guess maybe it was because they weren't crushing on defense. They didn't have any, you know, even though they had, you know, Nick Bonacani and they had good defense players, they didn't have anybody over there like a Butkus or a Lawrence Taylor or a single. So I don't know why they don't get included, but they don't seem to make the cut, and it drives them wild.
Well, I can understand why that wouldn't. And then I'm guessing because this team that they currently have out there at 0-6 doesn't seem to have, well, let's put it this way, the light at the end of the tunnel does not necessarily mean an opening. It could be the oncoming freight train.
No, it could be. This is a football team that's got a long way to go from a talent standpoint. The one thing I you break down the roster of the Patriots and I can't find a hole. The only, and if you want to call it a weakness, is the, and I heard you talking about this before I came on, the uncertainty mm-hmm. at the running back position.
Right.
You know, can Maroney stay healthy? How badly is Morris hurt now? If you looked at every position on this football team, defensive backs, linebackers, D-line, tight end, offensive line, wide receiver, quarter, you really have to get all the way to the running back before you even get a semi-little question mark. And that's a sign of when you have balance like that, when you don't have a wart that you have to try to hide, that you have to try to put makeup on, that hopefully the opposition doesn't find it, man, that's when you are really good. And it doesn't happen in this day and age very often when you have as balanced a roster as the Patriots have now.
Dan Dierdorf visiting with us here inside the Patriots playbook. I had an emailer yesterday, Dan, say, well, if we're going to lose a guy like a Sammy Morris for a while, and if Lawrence Maroney doesn't come back, I mean, should we go back and ask Corey Dillon to come out of retirement? I'm like, well, first of all, we don't know yet about Maroney. Second of all, we do have a guy on the roster named Kevin Faulk.
Yep.
And I realized that Faulk, he had 50 yards, I think it was, last week, and the team rushed for a season low, 75 or whatever it was during the game. But it seemed to me that the game plan wasn't necessarily to stuff the ball down the Cowboys' throats, that they did what they wanted to do in opening up the passing game. So if the running back spot is a sore spot right now, would you advocate going to find out if there's anything out there that can help them, or stand pat?
Oh, you'd have to know the injury status of everybody. And, you know, obviously you don't have to do that if Lawrence Maroney can stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get Lawrence back out on the field and keep him healthy, and no, I don't think you got to go fishing. Let's face it, with Tom Brady's comfort zone in running the shotgun, if there was a team in this league that could succeed by not running the football at all, it might be the Patriots.
Mm.
You know, spread the field, go into the shotgun, and let Tom Brady throw it 60 times a game. They won't do that, and I'm not advocating doing that, but I'm saying if anybody could pull it off, it would be this offense.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, the weapons that he has at his disposal, of course, the argument that we always get into with fans has to do with who's a better quarterback, and it's really not an argument, really, because they both have unbelievable talent. But when you compare Peyton Manning to Tom Brady, and now in years past, we've talked about, well, Manning has different weapons at his disposal that Brady never really had. And now, obviously, he has them. And if you see the numbers, well, they're not only comparable, Brady's actually ahead of Manning. Can we finally put this who's better argument to rest?
No, of course not. Because you can't.
Thanks
because
for that.
It's totally subjective.
Sure.
And you're, what are you arguing about here? You're arguing whether a 1964 Chateau Margaux was better than a Lafitte Rothschild.
Very nice, by the way.
But you know, you're down to splitting such hairs. Yes, you have two quarterbacks who are playing the game at a different level than everybody else. And, yeah, you can argue it all day long, which one's better, which one could do this, which one could do that. I know this. There are two quarterbacks that you don't blitz because to blitz them is certain death. And that's not true for the vast majority of quarterbacks that have ever played this game. Most of the quarterbacks who've ever played this game, to blitz them is to rattle them. To blitz these two is to pay the price. So Hey, I see them both all the time. I'm a Michigan guy, and, mm-hmm. and so obviously I have a soft spot in my heart for Tom Brady. But if you plugged Peyton Manning into this offense, I have a sneaking suspicion you'll still move the football.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Exactly, right. Tom Brady is capable of running that offense. He could go to that line of scrimmage, and he could run the whole deal at the line just the way Peyton does it. And let me tell you something. You don't say that about very many other people, because what Manning does is really complicated. Tom Brady could pull it off in his sleep.
Dan, two pointed questions about the game this weekend. Number one, as you look at the Patriots roster, and I'm sure you've looked at a little film already and some videotape and tried to do some of your homework before the game, but what impresses you the most? Is there one thing that stands out that leaves you kind of thinking, wow?
Well, it's Tom's distribution of the football. Mm-hmm. It is his he wouldn't know what it means to lock onto a receiver. Tom has just reached a point with this offense, and give Josh McDaniels some credit. These two guys are really operating as like one single unit. But it's the way Tom works the entire field. Yes, you got Randy Moss and the Randy Moss factor, which, you know, Wes Welker and Dante Stallworth, after every game, should just swing by Randy's locker and go, thank you, thank you, thank you, just for being there. Because of the double coverage that he's going to get is opening it up for everybody else. But I look at Tom Brady as a guy who's just seeing the entire field from sideline to sideline and just so effortlessly, it seems, just sifting through his reads and his progressions and finding the open guy. It's been a while since I've seen a quarterback as comfortable and as on top of things as Tom Brady is right now. And the Patriots passing game is it's a thing of beauty. I did the game a couple weeks ago where, you mm-hmm. know, it was Ben Watson's turn.
Right.
You know, everybody else is covered, and boy, let's just throw him a couple touchdowns.
Yeah.
It's really
pass it around. Yeah.
He just never ever seems to be rattled, uncomfortable, or unsure of himself. And that's a position that's almost, you know, uncertainty is almost part and parcel playing quarterback in this league because of the way defenses will confuse you, and Tom just he just seems to be above it.
Second question on the game on Sunday has to do with the Dolphins. And have you been able to put a finger on a major reason why the dam seems to have burst in South Florida?
Oh, I think I know exactly what their problem is. Their problem is talent. They have a hole in their roster from poor drafting and poor personnel management that they are paying the price for right now. I'm going to tell you a little stat about the Dolphins that is pretty hard to believe. But the Miami Dolphins do not have a single player on their roster from their 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2003 drafts.
Good Lord. Really?
They have six consecutive drafts where they don't have a single player on their roster from those drafts. And those would be the players that would be 25 to 30 years old right now, that would be the, you know, the backbone of the football team, and they're not there.
Wow. That's a great find.
Yeah.
That's a great find.
Yeah, it's really, I stumbled on that baby today, and it's just I guess I should have saved it till Sunday, but you asked me
sure.
a question, that's it. They have huge talent holes in their roster, and there's no quick fix for the Miami Dolphins. It's going to take them a while to come out of this hole.
Dan, I appreciate your sharing that with us today, and we'll look forward to listening to you guys on Sunday.
Not a problem. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, bye-bye.
Dan Dierdorf, of course, for CBS Sports and the National Football League. Will be covering the Patriots game with Greg Gumbel on Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff, Dolphin Stadium in Miami, Florida. All right, good stuff. That's a great nugget. And guess what? You got it here first. Ha ha. So when he mentions that on national television on Sunday, you can say, I heard him say that inside the playbook. You remember where you heard it, right? Like Bilo used to say. You remember you heard it here first. But that's really good. And I guess, you know, it certainly stands to reason then. It makes a lot of sense why this team struggles so mightily in terms of the talent they have on the field. I mean, six straight years without a single draft choice from any of those drafts from 98 through 2003, that's extraordinary. You have to do a really bad job of screwing up in order to achieve something like that. That's flat out amazing. Well, let's see if we can take that a step further.
The Senior Vice President of Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, Harvey Green, who has been a contributor to our program in the past, joins us now here inside Patriots Playbook. Harvey, it is great to talk to you again, number one. I'm just sorry that your job is kind of tough right now.
Well, it is, but you know what? It's still the NFL, and as you guys found out a year ago when the Patriots came down here, you never know what's going to happen. I know you've got 6-0 versus 0-6, but the beauty of this game is that I know it's a cliche, but we saw it any given Sunday. So hopefully we'll have a good game, and coming into our place, it'll be a good home field advantage for us.
Let me ask you the question that was kind of obvious amongst Pats fans here yesterday when we were learning about Chris Chambers leaving for San Diego. Is this part of Miami waving the white flag?
No, not at all. I mean, we've got some veterans on this team who certainly wouldn't think that way, and the head coach, he doesn't believe that. What it is, as our GM said yesterday, it's a retooling and a way to try to improve as quickly as possible. I mean, you have lineup changes, as every NFL team does, year after year because of free agency, and so you try to do the best you can to change your roster and to improve as quickly as you can. Mm-hmm. And obviously when you're 0-6, you make changes that maybe you wouldn't do if you were 6-0. You have different goals. But certainly our coach has made it a point that our goal is to win every game we play on every Sunday. But at the same time, we have to do things that we think will help us improve on both a short-term and a long-term basis. I think Chris is going to be a great addition to San Diego. But we also think getting a second-round pick is going to be a great value for us as well, as we do try to improve this team and go in a different direction where, you know, that's different than where the first six games took us.
Sure. Well, certainly, Harvey, the 0-6 stands out, and that's what everybody focuses on when you have only, what, two teams in the NFL that hadn't won a game yet. That having been said, tell us what you think has gone well for this team. What has been a bright spot?
Well, I think, first of all, and people in New England have seen it because they know Ronnie Brown, and I think mm-hmm. people expected him to eventually have a breakout season when you're the second pick in the draft. If you've hit on that, then certainly after two or three years you should show it. And I think Ronnie has proven to us certainly and to people he's played against in the last four games that hopefully he's working his way up to an elite status, because he can do two things which makes him real dangerous. One is that, you know, he can run the ball, which we knew and we saw at Auburn. And two, which we saw to an extent, is that he can catch the ball. But I think the thing that's surprising a little bit now, and hopefully we can continue, is his durability. At Auburn, as you might remember, he shared backfield duties with Cadillac.
Right.
And then his first year with us, 2 years ago, as a rookie, he shared the backfield with Ricky Williams. He didn't so much last year, but now he's getting 20, 25 carries. He's getting maybe four or five catches. So you're talking about perhaps 30 touches a ball game, and so far he seemed to thrive in that kind of environment. So he's kind of come into his own in the last four games, and in part because of the improved player offensive line. You know, there were some problems early on, and there was some criticism, but you have a guy like Kutzenhelk as your offensive line coach. Those problems shouldn't last very long, and he's done a great job with the players he has around him, including a rookie at center. So I think the offensive line has been a bright spot. You know, again, when you're 0-6, there are some errors that haven't played well, quite honestly, and in some cases it's pretty evident. But there are also some that have played well, and I think that the offensive line and Ronnie give us chances to win games. And on the road, two of them we lost by a field goal. So we are doing some things right, and we just need to improve on those areas and correct the ones we're not.
Well, it would appear, certainly statistically speaking, that Ronnie Brown is your go-to guy, because not only does he lead you in rushing, he leads you in receiving. In fact, he had more catches, I believe, than Chambers did before he left your roster yesterday. So, you know, what can this team then do at this stage, based on what you're privy to keep teams from loading up to try to stop Ronnie Brown?
Well, you know, the focus obviously falls on some of our younger players now, offensively. I mean, here's where Cleo Lemon, Derek Hagan, Ted Ginn, David Martin, all young players with a lot of talent, have to step up. As we said yesterday when we made the trade, not only are we getting a second-round pick, but it's also an opportunity to get a guy like Ginn, who was a ninth pick in the draft, get him some more repetitions out on the field. I mean, he was a ninth pick overall. Derek Hagan was, I think, a third-round pick. He's a young player. And so we need to get these guys on the field and see what they can do. And if they live up to the expectations we have, if Cleo plays like we think he's capable of, and if David Martin continues to improve, then our passing attack can take some of the burden off of Ronnie. Because you're right, until we can prove it, if I'm a defensive coordinator, now the first thing I try and do is take Ronnie Brown out of the game and go from there. And the only way we can prevent that from happening, frankly, is to have some of our younger players now play to the level that we think they can now that they're given the opportunity to show that.
How do you think that Cleo Lemon has kind of stood up to the challenge here thus far, and what's his upside? Where do you see him growing?
Well, you know, Cleo's a smart guy. One good thing is he played the last game, started the last game of the year in Indianapolis a year ago in a tough environment. So, you know, he's gotten a little bit of skins on under his belt, so to speak. And I think he's got great athleticism. He's got a good arm. The one problem, frankly, is experience. I mean, he played in the Arena League, hasn't had much time in the NFL, had a good training camp, played well in the preseason games. But as you well know, the expectation level as a starting NFL quarterback is so much greater, and his decision-making needs to be on the level that you have to play winning football. You can't make bad decisions. You can't force throws. You can't turn the ball over. And I think for any young quarterback, Tom Brady seems to be the one exception. You need to go out, play smart, play within yourself, and as a coach said, a kick isn't a bad way to end the series. Don't turn the ball over. If you get a punt or a field goal out of it, that's certainly far preferable than a pick. So if Cleo plays intelligently, and he is a smart guy and learns with each game, then he has the ability, certainly, to be a good quarterback in this league. But you never know with young players what direction they're going to go. You've seen some, as you all know, who excel right off the start, as rare as those people might be. And you see a lot of us who struggle, and it takes a while before they learn the speed of the game and learn how to adapt and make smart decisions.
Harvey Green of the Miami Dolphins, their Senior Vice President of Media Relations, joining us here inside the playbook. The Patriots, of course, travel to Miami to take on the Dolphins this Sunday at Dolphin Stadium, 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. What can you tell us about Trent Green, not only present, but about his future? And is there any real thought that he could return this year?
That's a good question. And if I were on your show about 3 hours from now, I might be giving you a different answer because Trent and Coach are going to talk to the media today. Today's Trent's normal availability. And I don't even know the answer. We'll get some more information after that. But the bottom line is Trent, yes, they finished the last of his medical tests. He now knows what all the results were. He went back last week to Kansas City to see the same physician who treated him after his concussion a year ago with the Chiefs, so they're able to compare apples to apples in terms of what his baseline testing is. And Trent and Coach and his family and other people, our medical staff, are going to figure out what's best for Trent and what's best for the team. So I don't know what the answer is. You're right. People have said, hey, he should go back right now and play, and there are others who are saying he should retire. So, Trent is a competitor. You guys have seen him a little bit.
Sure.
No one wants to play more than he does. No one wants to win more than he does. But at the same token, Trent's a smart guy. He's a family man, and he's not going to do anything that's going to jeopardize his long-term well-being or the well-being of his future with his family. So it's a complex decision. It's not like a knee injury where you know it's going to take time and heal and you can measure it. This is really an area that it's as much an art as it is a science. And Trent and our medical staff and his family and our coaching staff are going to have to make a determination on what we think is the best direction to go. So that's a long way for saying I don't know yet,
right.
But we should know more in a couple of hours.
No, good answer. Good stuff. Well, I think most Patriots fans, Harvey, realize that the part of the Miami team that has given the Patriots the most trouble over the years, certainly recent years, has been on the defensive side of the football. And I guess maybe that's the most alarming thing from a Patriot perspective as to this 0-6 start is how come this defense is struggling? And so I would kind of point the question to you. What about this defense is causing some of the problems?
You know, it's funny because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'll bet if you looked at Tom Brady's quarterback percentage or quarterback rating against our defense, for some reason, certainly we haven't been a playoff caliber team during most of his tenure in the league, it's probably a lot worse than it is for everybody else or for most other teams he's faced. I don't know why. We'd like to think we've done a good job. We've had a good defense here in past years, that have held him in relative check, although a guy like that you never can totally shut down. But it's been intriguing, and Jason Taylor talked about that today on the conference call to the New England media, that we've had success against Tom Brady. But I think part of that is with a defense that's frankly different than the one we have now, for better or for worse. You know, we have changes in our secondary. We lost some players, brought in others, such as Joey Porter. You know, Jason, I believe, is still playing at a high level, so is Zach Thomas. But we've had some deficiencies elsewhere, and it's been tough to make up for that. You know, you can't give up 200, 220 yards rushing. You can't give up a third down conversion rate of 8 of 11. You know, you got to get your defense off the field, not only to give your offense a chance, but to give your defense a break. You know, we do have guys like Keith Traylor and Jason and Zach and Vonnie Holiday when he's healthy. And you know, it's tough to ask these guys to play 55, 60, 65 snaps a game. So the real problem we face defensively is twofold. One is we have to be better on third down. It's great if you stop them on first down, if you stop them on second down, but if we're getting defenses in third and eight, third and nine, you need to be able to make that play. It's a lot different than third and two, and we haven't been able to do that. The second area where we've struggled, frankly, is in the areas of turnovers. You know, we need to create a short field for our offense, and we haven't been able to do that. We haven't been able to turn the football over there either via interception or fumble recoveries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a problem even over the last couple of years. So for us, it's a situation defensively where we need to, A, get off the field, and B, if we can't, at the very least, create some turnovers so we can give our offense 50 yards to go instead of a long field. In fact, Coach yesterday pointed something out, which I didn't even realize. We had some penalties in one of our drives last week, mm-hmm. that actually when you added up all the yardage we gained in one of our touchdown drives, it was over 100 yards. So we actually had to move the ball over 100 yards to score a touchdown.
Wow.
Now, you're not going to win many games if you do that. You need to have some sequences where you only need to move the ball 40 or 30 yards, and the only way that happens is via a turnover or special teams play.
Sure. Well, you brought up the coach, and obviously Cam Cameron in his first year as head coach there after having great success as his assistant, most recently as the offensive coordinator at San Diego. How difficult has his tenure so far in Miami really been?
Well, you know, Coach has done a real good job in keeping the team focused and staying positive. You know, it's very easy to get down at 0-6, but you know, as you saw last week, you know, we're down 24-3. It would have been easy, to, as you said at the very beginning, to wave a white towel. We didn't do that. You know, we played hard, came back, and we lost the game, but it wasn't because of a lack of effort. And I think from that standpoint, this goes back to what he said at the very beginning when he took over. He wants a team of character. He made some changes on our roster to do that, and I think we're seeing it now. You know, it's easy to be a team when you're winning, but it's a lot tougher to do that when you're losing. Adversity tests your character, and I think the fact that our guys are still enthusiastic, still playing hard, shows that his decision to emphasize character in the additions he's made and some of the distractions he's made has paid off. Now we just have to translate that into some wins and losses.
Right. Harvey, thank you again for visiting with us today. It's great to talk to you again. We'll look forward to doing it again sometime soon.
Thanks a lot. Look forward to seeing you on the weekend.
You got it. Harvey Thanks. Green, Senior Vice President, Media Relations for the Miami Dolphins, joining us here inside the playbook again on this Wednesday. And Harvey's always been good to come on, win or lose, no matter what the situation is, and we appreciate his taking some time to try to sort of, I don't know, decipher what's really going on with this Miami team. We have a hard time figuring that stuff out from time to time. And why is this team 0-6? And is it just because they stink? What about them stinks? Well, shed a little light on the subject there. So that was good of Harvey to do that. Quite frankly, I think most Patriots fans know already anyway that any time that the Patriots step foot in South Florida, they're in for a battle. I said this yesterday, I'll say it today, and I'll probably say it again tomorrow, that I don't think this is a slam-dunk foregone conclusion that the Patriots are going to stomp all over them. Do I think the Patriots will win the game? Sure I do. Obviously, the odds makers agree. They're, what, I think I looked this morning, 16.5-point favorite, I think was the last spread that I saw. So, do I think the Patriots will win? Absolutely. But I do think, and I mentioned this specifically in yesterday's program, that it wouldn't surprise me at all to see this still a game in the third quarter before the Patriots eventually pull away, much in the same fashion that they did against the Dallas Cowboys last Sunday. I could see this being a one-possession game, a one-score game, a touchdown lead or somewhere thereabouts,
in the third quarter, early in the third, midway through the third, before the Patriots score again and kind of lengthen things. And you know that even though one year is different from the next, one year's personnel is different from the next, and this year's game really has had no influence or bearing on anything that has ever transpired in Miami before. And yet, history dictates that this is a tough place for the New England Patriots to play football. If you have been a Patriots fan for any extent of time, you know that every time that they go into South Florida, it is a difficult thing. Something happens, whether it's, you know, I don't know, an overcharged and overhyped and over, you know, psyched up Miami team is up for the occasion, or a Patriot team comes in as an underdog, and Miami was supposed to roll, and the Patriots give them a hell of a game. Something always happens. Overall, the series between New England and Miami, this is the 84th time in their history that they will meet on Sunday. It is their 42nd year as division foes together. Patriots have won 7 of the last 11 games overall against the Dolphins, and 6 of the last 9. However, Miami has won 3 of the last 5 in this series. We also know in the last couple of years, in fact, I believe it was in the last Super Bowl year in 2004, Patriots went down there, and even though the game didn't really mean much in the overall scheme of things, they still lost it. So, who knows? Do I think that they'll lose on Sunday? Not really. But I'm saying nobody here should be surprised if this game turns out to be a tougher struggle than you may think it is here on Wednesday in the middle of the week.
I want to kiss you.
Thank you.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's always good to hear Joe Namath chip in his 2 cents worth. Overall, the series stands at Miami 47 wins, New England 33 wins. The record in Miami, the Patriots have won 8 games and lost 31. So I guess maybe that sort of underscores what I'm talking about here, the fact that this team has struggled in South Florida. 8-31, including a 1-1 record in the playoffs. Their record at Dolphins Stadium, which was pro player, which was Joe Robbie before that, 6 wins and 14 losses at Dolphins Stadium, where they'll be on Sunday. 6-14. So, and by the way, Bill Belichick, his record as a head coach in Miami or a head coach versus Miami, 7 wins, 9 losses. Although his record against Miami as coach of the Patriots is 7 wins, 7 losses. 0-2 as coach of the Browns. So, again, it dictates that this is, for whatever reason, no matter the relative strengths of the two teams, this has always been a problematic area. I'm not necessarily running up a red flag. I'm merely explaining the numbers to you as they are going into this game, and you are left of your own volition to decide for yourself what you believe and what you don't believe will transpire on Sunday. But don't be surprised if it's a struggle. Now, of course, if the Patriots come out and lay half a hundred on them and beat them, you know, and embarrass them 52-10, well, then you come back and you say, well, see, look, I told you, you know, we knew they were going to do this. Well, of course you did. And you'd have to say that the odds favor that kind of a game more so than the struggle that I've been trying to describe here. But the history of the matchup between the Patriots and Dolphins indicates that it could be a struggle based on what has transpired in the past. So we're just merely kind of pointing that out for you. All right, let's squeeze a timeout in here if we can for a moment. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We'll get to some emails coming up. If you've got some questions or some thoughts on the game, we didn't really come up with an email topic per se today, but we can kind of continue some of the Pro Bowl stuff we were talking about yesterday. If you have, here's a good one for you, just off the top of my head here, because we've been talking about this struggle between the Patriots and the Dolphins overall. And why, in your estimation, does it always seem there's one team on your schedule that you always have trouble with, regardless of the one-loss record? Why is there always one team that even if they're really good and you're really bad, or especially if you're really good and they're really bad, like in this particular instance, why does it always seem you have trouble with them no matter what? I would be interested in your perspective as to why you think that happens between not just the Patriots and Dolphins, but between other teams and even in other sports. Why does it always seem that some matchups are just tough? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. I'd love to get your thoughts if you've got some of the answers to that, or if you've got some theories on an answer to that particular question. That'd be really cool. I'd love to hear it. And we'll hear from Cam Cameron, the head coach of the Dolphins, Jason Taylor, who, of course, is their premier Pro Bowl defensive end, coming up in the second hour inside the Patriots playbook.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for them, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your ticks.
And get the Revolution.
The Revolution.
Hi, this is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots License Plate today.
When you got a lineman size hunger and want the awesome authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game, and get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
One of my all-time favorite shows of all time. In fact, I sometimes have this theme song playing in the back of the far recesses of my brain, thinking finally upon those days that I called in, or not a called in sick, but explained to my mother.
How sick are you?
Exactly.
Explained
to my mom.
Sick,
mom,
that blank.
I'm so sick I can't go to school today because I want to stay home and watch the match game. Awesome game show. And did you know that, by the way, Gary, did you know that Brett Summers just recently passed away?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah, she just, like, within the last month or so, I want to say. And, of course, it's probably only been, I think, 3 or 4 months, Charles Nelson Reilly who was sat next to Brett Summers up on the upper tier there on the Match Game set with when Gene Rayburn was the host. Charles Nelson Reilly also passed away. Of course, my 12-year-old son knows Charles Nelson Reilly as the voice of the Dirty Bubble on the SpongeBob SquarePants cartoons. Pretty sick to know that I also know that too, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Richard Dawson's still around?
I think Richard Dawson's still with us, yes. But Brett Summers just passed away. Charles Nelson Reilly's no longer with us. Of the other regulars on that show, I believe Richard Dawson is still around, although I think he's dropped off the face of the earth. I think he's kind of a recluse, if I'm not mistaken.
Fanny Flagg.
Fanny Flagg, I believe, is still with us. Who else was a regular on that show? Trying to think. They usually had, you know, one really, like, sexpot type of female actress who sat down next to Richard on the lower tier, right?
Yeah, and a stupid blonde on the other side.
Yeah, and a stupid blonde on the other side. Of course, Fanny Flagg also sat on the other side, and she wore those crazy T-shirts that would always show off her rather well-endowed personage, for lack of a better phrase.
Was Bert Convy on there a bunch in the first seat?
Yeah, Bert Convy was there. This is well before he came out of the closet, I think. What else? Somebody else, I was just thinking of this the other day, too. They used to have some, you know, starlet sit in that front seat next to Richard, you know, and maybe it was an up-and-coming person or someone from a soap opera or whatever. Anyway, great game show. And obviously, in a lot of the talk radio, sports talk radio that I still do at this present time, whenever we, you know, have a slow news day, we like to get goofy, and we play the Match Game on radio. And so we ask our callers to compete against each other, and we ask you to fill in a blank, usually of some kind of a sports-related question. Maybe we have to do that one of these days here inside the playbook. Maybe we'll have to play a Match Game. We'll have to come up with a good prize, though, you know? There you go. Now that you got the theme song, we might as well put it to some use, right? Okay. Dumb Dora is so dumb. How dumb is she? we'll do that. We'll do that one of these days. And maybe that'll be a good, maybe it's a good bye week thing to do, you know? After the Patriots, you know, thrash the Indianapolis Colts. Knock on wood, right? All right, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. If you'd like to join us in the program, you can certainly do so and call in. For lack of a better one, just off the top of my head, an email question today. Didn't really get a chance to get in it early because of our interviews with Dan Dierdorf and Harvey Green today. But if you miss those, well, you'll just have to download and podcast a little bit later on. Or you can catch the replay at it. Approximately 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight.
Arlene Francis, is that who you were looking for?
Arlene Francis was another one. Oh, you probably DB'd it, didn't you? That's a good one.
I Googled it.
Did you Google it? Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. Arlene Francis was one. Joyce Villafont was another. Who was married to Bobby Van? Kind of a blonde, ditzy blonde bombshell type of one person. I can see her face, gorgeous lady, kind of a giggly type of personality, but she was a regular on that in there too. Anyway, I'll just blurt it out some point in time in the second hour of the show here when I come up with it. Anyway, the question of the day, totally sidetracked on the whole Match Game thing here. Question of the day has to do with perception of why. Why some teams seem to always match up well against others, and why you think that is, not only in just the Patriots-Dolphins case, although you can certainly include the Patriots and the Dolphins in your particular argument here, but why do you think it is that somehow, no matter the relative strengths of the teams, no matter the year, some teams just always historically seem to have trouble with the same team year after year after year? Why is that? And we don't have to hold this to just football. It could be any sport because you always see it. I mean, the Red Sox always have trouble with the Yankees. The Celtics have always had trouble with the Lakers, over the years. The Bruins have always had trouble with the Canadiens. I mean, let's face it, you know, maybe it's just because there's rivalries involved here. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. Webradio@patriots.com. What are your thoughts on that? All right, let's get to a few of the emails from earlier today. Luis in Tampa sent this note and says, I saw a list of Dallas's coaches, and I found the name of Chan Gailey. I know he failed to win a playoff game, but was he a good coach?
Well, I think when Chan Gailey got the job, Luis, that at Dallas, that it was sort of a surprise to a lot of people. I know that he had had a reputation of being a good, solid coach, but he had never been a head coach, I don't believe, at that level, certainly not at that level. And so it was thought of as that it was a bit of a stretch at the time. Now, Chan Gailey, good, solid, fundamental guy, but, you know, could he be a leader of men? Ultimately, didn't quite pan out for him, although I think he's had at least some success, certainly at the collegiate level, where he's now the head coach at Georgia Tech. But, yes, technically, I think a pretty good football coach. He says, I agree with yesterday's listeners that guy T.O. is ready to blow and tear the Cowboys team apart. Going to have to get used to seeing Ed Werder's blonde mustache a lot. Yeah, well, you know, Ed Werder kind of reminds me of Pedro Gomez from ESPN. Gomez was the one stuck with the Barry Bonds beat, like Ed Werder has the Cowboy beat. And there are a lot of times that I would interview and talk with Pedro Gomez. I'm like, dude, I feel so sorry for you that you got to put up with this garbage every day. And imagine you probably don't look forward to going to work thinking, oh, I got to deal with Barry Bonds again today. So it probably is a little like that at some point for Ed Werder. But, hey, that is the job, and that's why they pay you the bucks. That's the way it works. All right, this one comes from Alex, who says, what type of games were the Dolphins and Patriots back in the days of Dan Marino? Was it always that ugly? Well, let's see, for instance, let's go back a little bit in the calendar here, because I don't have all of the games, of the history between the two teams here. But just to give you some for instance here, back in the days of Marino, let's go with the early to mid-90s. They played at Joe Robbie Stadium, and then, of course, it then was renamed Pro Players. So let's go with the stretch between 1990 and, say, what, 1998? That pretty much encompasses his career there, right? Okay. All I know is when the Patriots played the Dolphins earlier in the year, in other words, when they played down there in, like, September, October, when it was really hot, you know, and very unseasonable, the Patriots never won a game there. They lost, in fact, in the month of September and October, playing the Dolphins in Miami in September and October, from 1971 through 2003, the last time they played early in the year there, the Patriots were a grand total of 1-13. And their only win was the last one in 2003, which was October the 19th. You remember that was the overtime game. Troy Brown caught the big pass. We have that picture, I think, of Steve Burton from Channel 4 still hanging up somewhere there in the studio cheering Troy's touchdown. But that was a 19-13 game. And that's the only win. The only win over that amount of time when they played the Dolphins at least early in the season. Of course, the last couple of years they played them later in the year, and now they're going back to playing them in October again. So, I don't know. Maybe it's the time of year. Maybe it's the weather. Maybe it's the humidity. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know, but the Patriots never had success. From 90 to 98, they lost 17-10, 38-17, 39-35, 24-10. And 12-9 in overtime. So it wasn't always ugly, but let's just say that they did just enough to get beat. That's really kind of what it boils down to. That's a good question. wow. So, all right, let's get another one here. From Bogota, here is our friend Alejandro. What kept Jimmy Johnson from putting together a championship team in Miami? He had some stout draft choices. Thomas Taylor, Madison Sertan. Was it Marino's fault? No. Doubtful. I don't know that Jimmy Johnson, when he came back after retiring from the Cowboys or moving on from the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know that he ever really had it in his heart to get back into coaching. I mean, the guy, you know, loves his boat. He loves to fish. He loves to get out and do things. I mean, he's always, I mean, Janis Joplin was one of his high school classmates, for goodness sakes. He's always a bit of a free spirit. You know, Jimmy wants to do things on Jimmy's terms, and when he doesn't, can't do things entirely on his terms, I don't know that he's lock, stock, and barrel sold. And so I got the impression that when he had that brief stay with the Dolphins, he just wasn't lock, stock, and barrel sold into, you know, doing it. So I think that more than anything else probably has to do with why he didn't put together, you know, or, you know, at least in his limited amount of time there, why he didn't put together a championship caliber team. Okay, Stripper sends this one. Would the Patriots win the AFC East with Castle at quarterback for the entire season? That's a good question. Based on what we've seen thus far, the AFC East, I'd have to say, yeah.
Yeah, just because of the support cast. I mean, you know, how bad could it be if Matt Cassel's throwing to Randy Moss and Wes Welker? You'd have to say yes, they'd still win the East based on, you know, the other guys, you know, failing to keep up. Who will get the goal line carries this weekend, Evans or Echol? My guess would be Evans first, then Echol. I assume Falk won't be in there, and this leads me to my next question. Better play this weekend, Falk versus Miami or Cotchery versus Cincinnati? It's his flex position. I am not a fantasy expert, but I would tell you I'd go Cotchery versus Cincinnati. With Watson out, do you think Kyle Brady will be an okay start in fantasy, or it's him or a waiver pickup of a sucky tight end? Ugh. I'd go with Kyle Brady if Watson, you know, with Watson being out. I'll be flying to Florida tomorrow. Okay, there you go. If you guys are hitting a gentleman's club, let me know. good stuff. He says the white jersey, Dylan jersey, will be making its appearance. I'm sure that the PFW guys will be thrilled. Thrilled, strippers. Absolutely thrilled. Here we go. This one comes from Mark with a C from New Hampshire. Good game against the Cowboys. Got a little nervous with Witten wide open that drive where Rodney couldn't cover him. Is that a look at what the Colts game and Dallas Clark are going to look like? I would have to say, however, that James Sanders' kid looks really good. Is he Rodney's replacement when he is all done? And by the way, that's a note to Fred. We'll leave that personal. I would say, James Sanders, well, yes. I mean, I would say that he's probably leaning that direction. You don't play somebody out there unless you think he has the opportunity to be there long haul. And so when Rodney is out, Sanders being in there, and Sanders still getting an appreciable amount of time, you'd have to say that at least initially that would appear to be the way that the Patriots are leaning. But you never can tell, you know, from, well, not so much week to week here, but from season to season, depending upon, you know, who they draft. I mean, quite frankly, I think a guy like Brandon Merriweather could end up, you know, playing in that particular slot. Whether that is next year or 2 years from now or 5 years from now, I certainly think he's going to figure into that equation at some point. This one comes, that one's already been said, I think. Well, it says, if the Pats have home field for the playoffs clinched after game 14 and the Pats are undefeated, does Bill still start Brady and go for 16-0 or rest the starters? I think we started actually talking about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, I think stubborn pride more than anything else will probably come into play. And because of that, I think the guys will still go out there and the starters will play. Now, I don't think that the starters will play, you know, a full 60 minutes or a full 50 minutes even. You might see them play a half, but I think, and this is something that I mentioned several weeks ago when we first started talking about this whole ludicrous idea of 16-0, that we get down to those last couple of weeks, if you've already clinched not only the division, but you've clinched home field advantage throughout the playoffs, it really doesn't make much sense to keep everybody out there for the entire game. Why would you take a chance on losing somebody to injury in a meaningless game when you still have, you know, the big cheesecake at the end of the tunnel, you know, waiting for you in the Super Bowl? So could I see the team play in a half? Absolutely. And then let the backups come in and play the second half and make it sort of like a glorified preseason game? I personally could see that scenario. I think it's a believable scenario and very plausible. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I don't think anybody should be surprised if it does. All right, let's get one more in here before we get off to Jason Taylor. Pete from Hingham says, guys, just read that both Chad Jackson and Eric Jackson are taking part in the media practice session today. I guess that means the Pats have 21 days to activate them to the roster. Do you think either or both make the roster? Who do they replace? What sort of impact could they have? Well, first of all, they've got 3 weeks to decide. So because they've got 3 weeks to decide, you're not going to see the Patriots make any kind of a move at all until that point. So they're going to take every bit of the 21 days they have to activate them. And even if they do, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I thought that a guy like Kelly Washington, even though he's been somewhat valuable as a special teamer, I think that, you know, his name would have to come up because you don't see him, you know, participating as much in the offensive rotation amongst the receivers. And I guess it really depends on where they want to put Chad Jackson. Eric Jackson's he's just I'm not quite certain that they're going to activate him. And I'm not sure who would go in his place. Again, I think that's a decision, honestly, that will take the full 21 days to decide. And of course, you don't know what's going to happen injury-wise over the course of the next 3 weeks. So it may very well be, you know, they're counting on somebody, and just because of the odds favoring it to happen, somebody getting a little nicked up, and that's how one of these guys gets activated. He says, personally, I would love to see Chad Jackson contribute some, as he could be a nice cheap replacement for Stallworth next season. I don't have much knowledge on E. Jackson. Is he a solid backup in the secondary? Is he strictly a special teams guy? Yeah, I think they like the fact that, you know, he could be a good backup in the secondary. But either way, whoever is activated, if either one of them are, they're both going to have to play special teams. That's just the way this team operates. That's the way it's going to have to be, and that's the way it usually is. You know, when the Patriots, you know, activate guys like that off the roster or off the PUP, you're going to have to come in and contribute somewhere, otherwise we're not going to activate you. We'll IR you and put you on the shelf for the rest of the year until you can prove you can, you know, contribute where we need you to. So, all right, at this time then, let's tune in to Pro Bowl defensive end Jason Taylor from the Miami Dolphins, a part of that Dolphin defense that always seems to give the New England Patriots and the Patriots offense and Tom Brady and Matt Light in particular all kinds of trouble when the Patriots visit the south of Florida. And a short while ago, Taylor had a chance to visit with members of the Patriots media.
Hello.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
What's up?
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, sir.
You know, and we've done it for 11 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. And a lot of starts.
Yeah.
And a lot of consecutive starts.
Yeah.
I guess I did my research. You're 8 away from Langer's starting record. Is that true?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's a pretty amazing thing for a defensive player.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Does it ever get old? Does it ever get to the point you say, what am I doing? How come this is... how did it happen so fast?
You definitely look back and say, how did it happen so fast? It doesn't really get old.
Yeah.
Losing gets old, but...
Yeah, that's for sure.
Practice sometimes can get old, but Sundays are always great. Sundays are always fun, and you know, you have an opportunity to compete and a chance to win, and that's what we do it for.
Jason, you've always had terrific games against the Patriots. I don't know how many interceptions you have, but I know you've had a couple against these guys. And sack-wise, you've always done well against everybody. But how is it now? How is it working now? The numbers tell us that you've given up the second most points in the league, and that's very uncharacteristic of the Miami Dolphins defense.
Yeah, it is. It's been a tough year. For the first time in my career, I've been on the other side of the kind of on the other side of the coin,
yeah,
so to speak. And, you know, we've had issues before where offensively and trying to score points or move the football or take care of the football, and defense has had some success. But this year it's kind of turned around, and that's unfortunate. It's a position that we haven't found ourselves in before, so it's all new to us. But you've got to handle it the same way. I mean, you've got to continue to look in the mirror and see what you can do to help us play a little better. You know, we're a different team than we were last year defensively. Got different players. You know, the same scheme for the most part, but it's, you know, I think the players we lost in the offseason have really made it difficult for us to have the same type of success we had last year.
Yeah, we've always, you know, from our vantage point here, one of the great consistencies in the AFC East was always the Dolphins' defense. They could win games. They'd win games by themselves. And I wonder if you're capable of doing that still.
I think we're capable if we... But I think we have given ourselves less room for error,
yeah,
just based on you know, based just on personnel. I think we still have enough talent here to play better on defense and play well. And for a couple of weeks this year, it was the you know, first and second down, they were running the ball too much on us and moving the football. And then lately, it's been third down. It's kind of been our Achilles heel. So we're kind of taking turns messing up and find the different facets of the game to kind of be our Achilles heel. And if we can eliminate that and kind of get on a roll of playing consistently on all three downs, then I think we can still have that same level of success.
You know, you talk about your longevity, and you're not even close to Junior Seau. We thought you had a going-away party for him a year ago or whatever, and that was the end of it. And here he is back here still playing.
Yeah, when he retired for about 16 hours.
Yeah.
He's
that's right.
Junior is. I texted him earlier this week, and I'm yet to hear back from him. So I guess that's kind of how we are now. But I'm trying to find out where that fountain of youth is, because he definitely found it.
Yeah, you're only a kid compared to him.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing to play that long at that high of a level and with that much energy, and not only does he play with that energy, but he practices the same way, and every day it's the same junior. I mean he works as hard as any, I mean, as hard or harder than any young kid in the NFL, and it's a real testament to him as a person and as a player to see what he's done for so long and continues to do even today.
We see, you know, you playing and all the stories about the way you play. You're very similar in terms of your high energy level, and I mean, we never see you play a bad game, quite honestly. How does that happen? Is that just always the way you've been?
I just have, you know, you have a, when you have a passion for it and you love what you do and you enjoy competing and you enjoy the game, I think it's easy to play with passion. And when you're playing for somebody or something bigger than yourself, I think it's easier to kind of lay it on the line. And, you know, Junior always thought when he was down here about respecting the game and loving the game and cherishing the game while you have it, because it only lasts so long. And you can see it in his play. You can see it in the way he practices. He cherishes the game and has a lot of respect for it. And, you know, young guys nowadays are getting a little different. They don't have the same level of respect for the game or for veteran players or for other things that I think some of the older generations have. But it's just kind of the way I always approach it. I love what I do. It's a great job, but unfortunately it's going to end at some point. And when it's gone, it's gone. So let me cherish it while it's here.
Jason, one of the guys, I know, well, hopefully you won't be in coverage on Wes Welker on Sunday, but he's a guy that you played with down there. Are you surprised that he's blossomed here in New England or not?
No, no way. We always knew what kind of player Wes was. And even in our struggles of years past, with offensively, he was always a beacon of light. And he was one of those guys, and I talked to him right when he was when the trade happened, that, you know, how much we were going to miss him and how disappointed I was that he was leaving. Although, you know, you understand the deal he's getting and the opportunity he has playing in New England with Tommy, boy, do we hate losing him. I mean, he was one of those guys that, like I was telling somebody earlier, he, Chris Chambers, you know, Dan Marino, O.J. McDuffie, some of the classiest guys that I've ever played with, and most unselfish players I've ever played with, too.
Jason, last year in the Sports Illustrated player poll, Tom Brady received one vote for dirtiest player, and he blames you. He thinks you cast that vote. So can you shed any light on that?
I cannot disclose. I cannot confirm nor deny.
Can a quarterback even be dirty?
Everyone can be dirty in some way. It's tough for a quarterback to be dirty, but obviously there's one of us out there that thinks he is.
Jason, can you talk a little bit about your matchups with Tom? You're one of the few guys, and your defense has been one of the few that have successfully stopped him on a number of occasions.
I don't want to say we've stopped him. We kind of got in his way a little bit, but I don't know if there is any really stopping Tom Brady. So we try to do, and it's really, it's like every week, you try to do what we do better than he does what he does, and it's kind of a matchup thing where in the back end, in years past, we've matched up well, covering a little bit and giving us some time up front to bring some pressure. We try to mix up coverages a little bit and bring pressure at different times instead of just straight four-man rushing. And whatever it is, our formula has had a bit of success in years past. But, I mean, you look at these guys on film now, and, you know, I've watched every game, being a fan of it for the last 6 weeks, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
Obviously, you've been a big fan of Tom's for a while. When you saw them bring in Moss and Welker and Stallworth in the offseason, did you think my job just got infinitely harder?
Yeah, I did. And it was kind of disgusted when you saw it. But, you know, Wes going there was bad enough, and then, you know, they go get Dante and Randy. It just makes it even worse. But, you know, you've got to, as much as you hate to say it, you got to respect what they're doing and the way they play and what they've been able to do over the last, heck, whatever, how long he's been there now, six, seven years or whatever. It's a real testament to the kind of players that they have and coaching that they have.
The trade deadline came and went yesterday. Chris Chambers, obviously, in San Diego.
Yeah.
The obvious question is, would you like to move somewhere else if this rebuilding process doesn't go the way, or it takes a long time? Do you foresee this as, were you thinking maybe you would get traded yesterday?
You're asking tough questions now, huh? It's you know, look, it came and went. I'm here. I've got a job to do, and in the off season, you know, I don't know what direction the team's going to go, and there may come a time where they're done with me, and at that point, I'll have to address that and look elsewhere. But for now, I'm still a Miami Dolphin.
At the start of last season, it seemed like you guys were close to the Patriots. You probably felt that way. A lot of people had you as a trendy Super Bowl pick. I mean, a year later, was that an illusion, or do you feel that obviously you've slipped backwards and the Patriots have gone ahead? Is that tough deal with?
I thought last year when we were kind of the sexy pick for the Super Bowl or whatever, I thought it was still, that was very premature for people to be thinking we were going to be that good, because we've won a handful of games at the end of the previous season. So, you know, I knew we would have some issues last season. I didn't think we'd be as bad as we were, but do I feel like we've taken a step back? Yeah, I think we have. And you know, everyone's afraid to use that word rebuilding. Everyone wants to put different terms on it and call it different things, but I think fans and players and people in general can see through all that facade sometimes and see it for what it really is. And at this point, we're in a rebuilding stage. And sometimes to rebuild, I think you have to tear down before you can build up. And, you know, I know every team reloads or retools or whatever you want to call it every offseason, but some need more than others. And obviously, I know the situation we're in now. It's very, very clear and easy to see where we are. And I'm not going to try to tiptoe around that, and nor do I like that. So the Patriots are going one direction and we have gone the other, and it's very disappointing.
Anything else, guys? Well, I appreciate you,
Thank you, Jason, as usual.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Jason Taylor, defensive end for the Miami Dolphins. Some good honesty, I think, there from Mr. Taylor. You can certainly, ascertain an amount of frustration in his voice. But, again, it's one of the reasons why I know that media loves talking to him, because they know he won't pull any punches, and certainly somewhat concerned over the direction in which his particular team is traveling and the way things are playing out. But he hasn't given up the ghost yet, and nor would you expect anyone of his caliber of player to do so. I mean, he is a Pro Bowl player, and he is a leader on the team, and he is a veteran, and he still can play at a very high level. And you know that a win over the Patriots on Sunday, as unlikely as it might be to either you or I, that would go a long way towards curing a lot of the ills. I mean, they feel like they need one thing to get them started. Now, are they a playoff team? No. Would they be a playoff team if they beat the Patriots? No. But they need to be able to hang their hat on some nail, and this would be a great start. And this would help the rebuilding process begin that much more quickly. It won't get done by just one win over the Patriots, but the Patriots had better be careful, is all I'm saying. They had better be careful, because if he's playing up to his capability and Zach Thomas is playing up to his capability, you know, anything can happen. And if you go around and you leave a team in a ball game and you don't have a chance to put them out when you have a chance to put them out, literally, you can find yourself in trouble, especially, as we've already told you today, in an area and in a stadium and against a team in which historically they have had troubles before. This week, by the way, is going to be the only game that the Patriots will play in the regular season on natural grass. I don't know if that makes a difference to you or to the Patriots or anybody else, but it was just sort of an anomaly that I read this week that I thought I would bring out. This is the only game in the regular season this year in which the Patriots are going to play on natural grass surface, since, of course, the Pats went to the field turf full-time a year ago, and most everybody else seems to have done the same as well. 8 Patriot players are former Miami Dolphins. You can probably name them all, but you can certainly start with Izzo and Welker and Sammy Morris, and then you can add Junior Seau, remember? And Heath Evans, yeah, he did for a brief while in 05. Eddie Jackson, who, of course, was just recently was out of practice today off the PUP. Billy Yates, offensive guard, and Kyle Eckel last year spent time on the Dolphins roster as well. So just some tidbits that there is some familiarity certainly between the two sides, and maybe that more than anything else, kind of answering my own question a bit and asking why you think it seems that some teams always play other teams harder, and no matter the relative strengths of the teams, it's always a difficult battle. And maybe it's because, generally speaking, in a lot of these instances, there's a lot of familiarity between the players and the coaching staffs. Maybe you've had a lot of players changing addresses between those two teams. And because of that familiarity, it's tough. And I also think, to some extent, rivalry does play a point in it and play a part in it. I mean, Patriots play the Dolphins twice a year. They're rivals. They're in the same division. You know, the whole squish the fish thing. I mean, you know, very few, you know, teams are out there the Patriots would like to beat more. And I'm sure the case is the same vice versa. You kind of sense that from, you know, listening to Jason Taylor anyway. You know, while he has the utmost respect for Tom Brady and everybody else on that roster and some of the guys who have left Miami, in particular Wes Welker, as he was talking about, and come to New England, the fact is that he knows they can play ball. And he has a great respect for them, and he'd like nothing better than to whack them. So maybe that's part of the reason why sometimes, you know, no matter the relative strengths, it's just tough to play certain teams, and especially tough to play in certain stadiums like it is for the Patriots down in South Florida. Now let's get to some more emails, and then we're going to get to the end of our program today with Cam Cameron, who, of course, is the head coach of the Miami Dolphins in his first year since taking over, coming over from San Diego as the offensive coordinator under Marty Schottenheimer of the Chargers last year, and is 0-6 as a head coach now in the NFL. So you know that he liked that first win on his pelt to be the scalp of Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. So that would certainly be a great start for him. Again, it wouldn't cure all the ills, but boy, that would be certainly an eye-opener, wouldn't it? John writes, did you see the article in the Dallas Morning News regarding Patrick Creighton's comments on the Pats' defense? He basically says they are not for real. Although the Dallas offense only really scored 20 on the Pats' defense, I think there is some merit to Creighton's comment. The Pats for a quarter looked terrible on defense. They were getting exposed left and right, and their pass rush was absolutely terrible. I'm worried about a word that this defense, like last year's, is big, tough, and slow, especially their linebackers, who will be responsible for covering quick tight ends. I might be crazy, but I think they should be adding Pierre Woods and Eric Alexander to the rotation, especially on third and more than five. Well, I don't know that there's merit to Creighton's comment. I think Patrick Creighton, and I saw the comment that, you know, he said, ESPN had it on TV. I think it was born out of frustration more than anything else. Yeah, the Patriots did look, you know, somewhat, shall we say, a schizo on defense for a bit, but I think part of that is because Dallas is very good on offense. Pass rush, I would agree, was not good, but they were able to adjust and able to force Romo out of the pocket a bit, which is really what you don't want to do with a guy, but, you know, they held him to 199 yards, so it's not like he went off on him. I don't think this defense that the Patriots have is big, tough, and slow. Quite the contrary. Did you see Adalys Thomas on his interception return for a touchdown earlier in the year? I mean, I think this defense has enough speed. Could it be faster? Sure. But I don't think it's an alarming lack of speed defensively. Far from it. David from the Philippines writes, John, that was me on the it's too early comment. I specifically led with no offense to John Rook, so I'm sorry to hear you are so upset. I thought you could only vote once for Pro Bowl selections. If you can vote multiple times for your favorite players, then it certainly makes more sense to discuss it now. Also, I don't listen to your show nearly as much as PFW, as it's already 2 a.m. here when your show starts, so that's why I'm not so familiar with your format. I apologize if you're offended. It certainly wasn't my intent. David, I am not offended. I'm sorry that it came off like that, but, you know, when I heard Andy mention that on the program, I thought that would be a good starting point. The fact of the matter, and I really don't know what the Pro Bowl selections are. I was under the impression you could vote up to 10 times, and maybe I'm confusing some of the All-Star stuff, and perhaps somebody can correct, you know, can clarify here, but I was under the impression that you could vote more than once. It may be that you can vote as much as you like, but you have to do it from a different email address. Because I think you're supposed to log in with an email address. So if you have two or three different email addresses, I'm under the impression that you can certainly vote each time. I think that's the way they do that in the NFL. But, again, you'd only be able to tell that to go to NFL.com and start voting. No, I was just – my whole point really was to say that, you know, hey, you have to listen to the full context in order to really get the full meaning. And what we were doing merely was just kind of playing the game a little bit. And because it's a long season and because there's so very little to nitpick on with this football team, you know, you got to have some fun every once in a while. So you start looking at things like this, which have been a real sore point for a lot of Patriots fans over the last few years, getting Pro Bowl snubbed. So that's why we kind of started it. And no, I'm not upset. It's a good conversation starter. So if anything, Dave, I'm appreciative of the fact that you sent the email to those guys because it got me going conversation-wise today. So actually, I should be thanking you, and I will thank you. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for that. It got me going today. let's see what else we have here. This comes from Jimmy in Orlando. He says, note to the listener earlier today who bought $300 tickets to the Dolphins game. No shade whatsoever on the Pat side. Just a tip. It's 110 to 120 degrees on the field. Enjoy the sunshine state. One word, hydrate. He says, note to Bill, turn up the heat in your indoor practice area. You got to beat the heat and the fins. Yeah, that's a good point, Jimmy. I really think that has something to do with the fact that it's always been a struggle for the Patriots in Miami. The fact that it's just brutally hot, especially when they play them in September or October. And I already read you those numbers earlier here that in September and October, when they play down in Miami, the Patriots don't have any success. In fact, career-wise, 1-13 against the Dolphins in South Florida when they play them in either September or October. This is going back to 1971. 1-13. All right, so just kind of, swizzle that one around in your mouth for a while. Dave from the Philippines writes back here. He says, oh, John, I Googled Richard Dawson for you and got this. Richard Dawson was a game show giant in the 1970s, first as a panelist on the Goofy Match Game and then as host of TV's Family Feud. His career ground to a halt in the mid-1980s, and by the 1990s, rumors were circulating that Dawson was dead. Possibly the rumor mongers were thinking of Dawson's successor as host of Family Feud, Ray Combs, who really did commit suicide in 1996. Yes, that is accurate. Thank you, Dave. I do recall, obviously, Family Feud, and I know that there were some people that thought he was dead. I had forgotten, perhaps, though, that they might have confused him with Ray Combs, because I actually remember when that happened. Ray Combs, the story, and again, I'm just sort of remembering off the top of my head, but even though he was a superstar, for lack of a better phrase, when he took over the Family Feud from Richard Dawson, he was apparently had a real little man's complex, as he's a short of stature guy, and he had a hard time living in the shadow of Richard Dawson. Even when it came to how Richard would always come up on Family Feud and give the ladies on the panel a kiss. He refused to do that for a while. In fact, he refused to do that at all because I'm not Richard Dawson. You know, so I think he was just an odd bird and apparently just couldn't deal with the pressure. And it's kind of a sad story, actually. But anyway, that's what I recall was going on at the time. This one comes from John in Fayetteville, Georgia. If the Patriots are 15-0 when they play the Giants and the Giants are in the playoffs, here's why Bill Belichick would not put forth his best effort. First, he would not risk an injury to a key player. He showed this 2 years ago against the Finns. And second, he would not want to show a potential Super Bowl opponent anything that might help them. I would buy that to an extent. First, you're right. He would not risk an injury to a key player. So again, if the Patriots were 15-0 and they play the Giants, and the Giants have also clinched, I think there's every possibility that you'd see the starters play a limited amount of time in the game. And you know what, kids? When we get closer to this, and if we actually get to this point in time, and we're actually talking about this for real at the end of December, you're going to be all up in arms over it. And I'm going to say, hey, do you remember way back in October when we were talking about this here on the program? And we said this might happen, and now you're upset that it's happening. Well, this definitely will happen. Those of you that want to go for 16-0 and go for a slice of immortality, listen, that isn't so much a concern with this football team as it is winning a fourth Super Bowl in the last 7 years. That's the concern. That's what they want to do. That's their goal. Championships. That's what teams and players are ultimately remembered in the overall pantheon of NFL history. So let's just kind of, you know, keep in mind here that while 16-0 sounds great and it's great for bragging rights around the water cooler and everything else, it means squat unless they actually win the last three and get to the 19-0. So if they think that they can, you know, if they have nothing to play for, and especially if the Giants have nothing to play for, and by the way, I think the Giants will probably not only make the playoffs, but they could right now be the second-best team in the NFC behind Dallas, then neither team will put their best effort forward. Neither team, most likely, especially if they both have byes, neither team's going to want to risk it. I mean, the best thing, the best chance that you have of playing it out is hoping that the Patriots do indeed have a home field advantage and a bye, because then they're going to have the automatic off week. So you might want your starters to play because they know they're going to not play the next week because there won't be a game. But I think there's certainly a chance that you'd see them play two or three quarters and then, you know, rest up, so to speak, and not risk any further damage or injury or what have you. That is a very real and plausible scenario as this whole thing progresses. But we got 10 weeks to go, 9 weeks to go before we get there, don't we? Jimmy writes again. He says, who rested their players before the big games and got blown out of the playoffs? The Colts? He said there's pro and con to both. No doubt. No doubt. There's pros and cons on both sides. You ultimately have to decide what you think is best for your team in any given situation. And based on the history of it all and what we've seen Bill Belichick do, you'd have to say that history dictates that, yeah, he's going to hold some guys out. Certainly possible that he'll hold some guys out. And that this team will, you know, I mean, especially if it's a team like the Giants. I mean, a team like the Giants, they're 4-2 right now. If they come in that last week and say they're 10-5, and with a win, you know, they maybe, you know, clinch the 2 seed or what have you, or maybe they win the division. You know, if they're, you know, only got 4 losses, and then who knows? You'll see them loaded for bear and coming in to try to play hard. And the Patriots will have long since clinched something, a home field advantage or whatever. It's just one of those things. This is to me one of the common fallacies in the way the NFL has set things up. I mean, this happens in just about every sport every year. You always feel like teams that, you know, get off to such a great start, and because the seasons last as long as they do, you're always going to come down to a situation where you've clinched with time left to play, and then why, you know, when so much weight is put on championships, why would you want to risk injury to your star players when you're out there to play for a championship? And the answer to that is you don't want to risk injury. So you hold them out. Or you let them play a little bit because they'd be practicing anyway. You can hurt yourself in practice. You can hurt yourself, you know, by running wind sprints. You can pull a hammy doing just about anything. So injuries, as we all know, are part of the game. But you certainly increase the likelihood of injuries by going out there and participating in a full contact sport, you know, with the pads and everything else, you know, scrimmaging in a regular game. You have to kind of deal with it. I personally am of the opinion, you know, and again, this is how I've always thought. If you got a game on the schedule, you play the game. And I think most players believe that. If we got a game on the schedule, I want to play. Even if we've clinched everything there is to clinch, even at the risk of potentially hurting myself and being out, no player ever thinks like that. No one ever thinks about, oh, God, if I do this, I'm going to get hurt. Nobody does that. You just go out there and you play. You have to. You can't think about it, because it's when you stop and you think about it, that's when you really increase your chances of getting hurt. And so the players themselves, you know, no. They're going to all want to play. They'll all, and especially if the Patriots have clinched everything and know they've got a bye week. Oh, yeah, they're all going to want to play. So, like I said, that's, I believe, your best chance to get everybody out there to play in is that the Patriots keep rolling. Because then, you know, if the Patriots are, let's say they go into that last week against the Giants under your scenario, let's say if they go into that last week against the Giants 14-1, and they've still clinched everything, but they don't have the chance to do the undefeated thing, then I think there's less of a chance you'll see everybody play. If they're 13-2 in that last week, again, even further. Well, you know, we can't do anything else, so why should we go out there and risk further injury? And you know what? Again, let's add something else to that equation. You don't know what's going to happen over the next 9 weeks before we get to that last week. We don't know who's going to get hurt. We don't know who's going to be out. We don't know who's coming back. We don't know anything. You have to play it 1 week at a time. You have to experience it one game at a time and take it as it comes. And when you do that, then you allow yourself a chance, I guess, to plan ahead a little bit. But you really can't, you can't do that under really any scenario, any plausible scenario. You can't do it. You have to let the season play itself out. You just don't know who's going to be hurt. We could be looking 6 weeks from now at a completely different season than what we're looking at right now. We could be looking at a completely different season 3 weeks from now if somebody crucial gets hurt, or if two or three guys get hurt on one side of the football, or especially, as has happened in the recent past here, gang, especially if two or three guys at the same position get hurt, like the Patriots have been hurt in the secondary over the course of the last few years. It can spin things right around on a dime and can cause you, you know, some problems and change your outlook and cause you to lose a game that you didn't think you were going to lose. So there's so much football still to be played and so much time that's still left to go before we get down to that last week or two in the regular season deciding who to play and who not to play. It almost does no good to talk about it, even though we do talk about it, because, frankly, that's what we do around here, right? We talk about stuff like that. That's part of the show. You know, and like Dave in the Philippines would say, with all due respect, you know, it's too early to talk about things. Well, hey, you know what? It is kind of too early to talk about things. But we talk about it anyway. That's what we do here on the program. We take a look ahead when the guys down the hallway cannot. That's what talk shows and, you know, and programs like this are all about, trying to look ahead a little bit and to build up interest in the team and to see, you know, how best to follow them. You know, where the pitfalls might be, where the trouble spots might occur. So, anyway, good thought-provoking stuff, though, I must admit. Tomorrow's program, of course, will continue here at 2 p.m. Eastern time, and we'll hear from the Patriots locker room. Been able to go inside the locker room over the last couple of weeks and get you some good stuff from the players themselves as they prepare for the upcoming opponent. And we'll do the same thing tomorrow. We'll get the players' thoughts on facing the Miami Dolphins in Miami, and that'll come up for you on tomorrow's program. And we'll also have Russell Baxter from ESPN, the NFL research coordinator. He'll join us. He'll be here with us approximately 2:45 Eastern time tomorrow, and we'll put a spin on the Patriots and the Dolphins for you, as well as take a look at some of the other games on the slate in Week 7 around the NFL. So that will be on the docket for you tomorrow, as well as Patriots head coach Bill Belichick for you on Thursday's program. In the meantime, let's wrap up today's program with the conference call from Patriots Media and the guy who came over from San Diego, certainly not expecting to start his head coaching career at 0-6, even though he's a very good offensive coach under Marty Schottenheimer. But as a head coach, you'd have to say that, no, it has not been an easy time for Dolphins head man Cam Cameron. Well, here's Coach Cameron with members of the Patriots Media.
Good morning.
Good morning, Cam. How are you?
Oh, we're doing okay.
Yeah, 0-6 is a tough thing to go through, but do you see any light at the end of the tunnels? Any areas of the team that's improving to the point where, you know, there's some hope that the second half of the season will be a little bit better?
Well, there's the most pleasing thing is just our approach, and I think our guys, our preparation is still good. Our guys still believe that we can improve, and our focus has been on improvement. And I think you just continue to do that, and you continue to do that, you get better. And it's you know, it's my job, it's our job as a staff to get the most out of this football team, and that's what we're setting to do.
If you go on an individual basis, Ronnie Brown he's having one fine season, second in rushing, and also he's your top receiver. I mean, he's doing it all for you.
Well, it's really been a collective effort offensively, even though we got a long, long way to go offensively. But our offensive line, we made a lot of changes there, basically changed every position. David Martin has come around, and it's all those things add up. But Ronnie's making the most of all his opportunities.
You know, when you took over as coach, the assumption was that the offense would be better, and it eventually, you know, after you get all the pieces in place, that is. And it shows that you have that. Defensively, however, it's kind of from this vantage point, it's always been a given that they're a very efficient defense, but things are difficult right now. Points scored and, against them and all. What's gone wrong there?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think if you, for example, you look at New England, scoring a lot of points, but it's a factor of The special teams is doing their job. Defense is doing their job. It all is intertwined. And, you know, we've got other issues. It's not just defensive issues here. Offensive, we can get better. We haven't taken care of the football on offense, and that doesn't help your defense. Our kicking game has got to continue to improve, which we have improved. But our kicking game's got to find ways to help our defense. It all, when something is not going well, usually it's all pointed to one phase, but the other two phases usually contribute. And I think just you look at New England, as good as they are playing, everybody's contributing. You know, their defense is scoring. You know, they're scoring a lot of points, but their defense scores. Their kicking game scores. And so that makes everything look good. So we got some problems we got to solve on defense. We had to fill some holes. We've lost some guys, but our issues are team issues.
Yeah, you got to, of course. Just as a news note, you traded Chambers yesterday. He was your he's been a terrific player there for a long time. You traded him to the team he came from. But certainly they needed some help. How did that all come to pass, and what was the thinking there in trading one of your better players?
Well, A.J. Smith had called Randy Mueller, I guess it was Monday night, and then Randy informed me, and we talked it through. We slept on it, and Chris has been outstanding during my time here. His preparation has been first class. His effort in practice has been first class. I think he's having an outstanding season. And we concluded that we've got some young guys that can play as well. You know, we come out of games with Derek Hagan getting 12, 13, 14 snaps, Ted Ginn starting to grow, and we just felt that we've got some guys that can step in and fill that void. And I think it's a great situation for Chris. I think it's a tremendous opportunity for the guys on this football team to help us now. It's not a sign of rebuilding. We're six games into this season, and we think the guys filling in can help us this season.
You got a kind of an odd situation. You have the Patriots this week at home, which is, if you're going to get them, you better have them at home. But then next week you go to a foreign country as a home game. It's got to be a little difficult preparing for something like that, isn't it?
Well, we've done a lot of preparation for the London trip prior to the start of the season, and our sole focus right now is New England. And I think we all know the National Football League, you better take it one day at a time. You better take it one game at a time. And when that game is concluded, you switch gears quickly, you adapt. Adaptability is a must in this business. And that game will be here soon enough, but we've got a more pressing issue right now, and that's New England.
You have two defensive players that have played, have started in an incredible amount of games. Jason Taylor is eight away from the consecutive start record on your team. And, of course, you've got Zach Thomas has played 167 games. Mm-hmm. And they're the leaders of your defense. It's amazing that players of that, and they're still good. I mean, they still play at a high level. That's pretty amazing in some respects.
Well, it's when you're around the great ones, you appreciate them so much. And I remember being around Junior Seau as well in San Diego.
Yeah.
And then I told our team today, he's having, and I can't remember the last however many years he's been playing good, but I was at his retirement speech last year.
Really?
And they turn on the tape, and here he is playing as good this year as any time I've seen him, and then having gone against Rodney every day in practice in San Diego, and then just competed against New England. You have so much respect for Zach and JT and Rodney and Junior and Teddy, and I can just go right down the list. That's why you respect the veteran players in this game so much, because we know how difficult it is and how hard it is, and these guys have just managed to do it.
How does it happen? I agree with you. We all thought Sayo was all done and down there. It was a nice ending to a nice career. And he comes up, and he is a valuable player. He makes big plays when he's on the field. How does it happen? Is it the system or being in the right place at the right time or all that talent that you had, you can get it out, squeeze it out within, in the right atmosphere?
Well, I think the first two things you said are both true. And I think from what I could tell, Junior's only issue was just staying healthy. You know, it was never a matter of when he was healthy, what level he could play at. And he just has had some misfortune and some injuries the last few years. And so far this year, he's staying healthy. And I think anyone would tell you that. Anybody that has competed with or against Junior, when he's healthy, this guy, he may play till he's 50.
Yeah. Well, Jason Taylor may too.
No question. Same thing. When these guys are, and obviously it's harder and harder to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But then again, that's why these guys are special.
You know, there's a lot of ties. Obviously, you from Miami guy Welker has done a terrific job here. You didn't have him last year, and you weren't there. So, but the fact is that he's had a huge effect. The fullback. Has done a nice job here. There's a Miami connection of players that have come up here besides Junior that have done well.
Yeah, it's interesting to now see that from this angle.
Yeah, right.
Having had Wes Welker as a rookie in San Diego, I remember when he caught his first two pump in preseason for a touchdown against Arizona. If you talk to him, he'll remember it. And we all said this kid is a player. And obviously he got grabbed out of San Diego here in Miami, and then we all know how the thing transpired this off season. But no, it's interesting to see it from this angle, and we'll see if we can do everything we can to kind of get that thing turned around.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You had him in San Diego and didn't have him because he was going, you know, he didn't make it. And then he goes to Miami, he leaves before you get there. And now you're facing them. It's kind of strange how this business is, isn't it?
Well, if you're in it long enough,
yeah.
You usually cross paths with everybody. And I think that's why, you know, we all respect each other so much because it's we know each other well. We know how good the players are. And obviously there's a lot of great coaches in this business too. So it's there's a lot of mutual respect throughout this league.
You get a good perspective on the Patriots having played them at San Diego, a huge game that was, and the kind of quality they have as a team, and you came from a team with great quality. How do they look compared to the last time you prepared for them? Are they better now? We think they are, but who knows?
Well, they've always been very good, and the moves they made in the off season have worked out well for them. You know, you look at what they've done with the receiving core, and we were involved in a lot of those negotiations with a couple of those players. So we knew what they were getting when they got Stallworth and having gone against Moss. We know that. And, mm-hmm. But they've helped themselves, and we all know how they built that team from the inside out. And Tom is just playing as well as anybody in the league, and maybe as well as anyone we've ever seen at this period of time over a six-game span. So they're going on all cylinders. They're a great football team, and in my mind, it's obvious. They are a better football team than they were a year ago.
Really? Yeah, I guess it is. Just with those players alone, how close do you think you came in acquiring any of those players, those wide receivers?
Well, you never really know.
Yeah.
You're talking to agents most of the time, and there's usually a bottom line to all that, we know. But it went down to the wire, I would say, on a few of them.
Stallworth was one?
Yeah, Stallworth was one, and obviously we were heavily involved in Wes, and we have a high opinion of Sammy and, Kelly Washington and so forth. So, that's what this business is all about, and I guess the good news is we were looking at the right guys.
Yeah, you do certainly know your talent. So did they, apparently.
Absolutely.
Speaking of talent, what about Cleo in his first or second start? I guess it was. He'll be there again this week, and
yeah, he did a nice job in Cleveland. There's some plays that I think he would take back and. Mm-hmm. But he gave us a chance. He brought us back in the third quarter, and we narrowed the gap within a field goal, and we just weren't able to get over the hump in the game. And the one thing that I feel comfortable about Cleo, that he's going to continue to grow. He's still young and as a quarterback in terms of experience. He's going to get better and better, and he gives us a heck of an opportunity to win each week.
You know, it's funny. You talk about Welker, and you had him young. And Cleo is a – was he in the Arena League?
Yes.
He's one of those kind of humble – and, you know, they can still make it in this league, and they can make it big.
Well, and sometimes the driving force that you see in a lot of these guys is that, they're hungry because they know what it felt like when nobody wanted them.
Yeah.
They knew, and they've got so much invested in this opportunity that they're going to do everything they can to keep it from slipping through their fingers, you know, whereas sometimes it's tougher, you know, a guy comes in and he's handed a job to some degree based on where he was drafted. Maybe he takes him a while to get that hunger. But if the guy's made the right stuff and has a certain amount of talent, he can not only make it this league but play at a high level.
Ted Ginn Jr., what kind of development has he gone through?
Pardon me? I didn't hear the first part.
I'm sorry. Ted Ginn Jr. now.
Got it.
The Chambers is gone. I mean, do you expect him to increase his role on offense?
Yes. I mean, he'll have and he's had that the last couple of weeks, and he's growing. He comes to work every day, and he's one of the better practice players that I've seen as a rookie. Derek Hagan, who really had an outstanding training camp for us, is going to increase his opportunities, and will really replace Chris Chambers with two guys. And I think these two guys, this is their opportunity, and I know they're both looking forward to it.
I know coaches can't be swayed by public opinion, but at the draft, a lot of fans weren't happy with the selection of Ginn. Do you acknowledge that put a lot of pressure on Ted, and how's he handled that?
Well, I think, you know, there's a certain amount of pressure on any top 10 pick, and he's handled things extremely well, and that's been really no surprise. I've known his background, and his father was a coach, and he is he's again as I said earlier, he comes to work for a rookie as like a pro. He wants to get better every day, and that's why you're seeing him start to really grow here in this really his fifth and sixth weeks. You just see the growth, and you know, there's a guy who could still be in college, number one. Missed majority of our off season with a foot injury, and now he's just continuing to grow like you'd like all young players to do.
How does his speed compare to other guys that you've coached in your career?
He's being around Darryl Green back in Washington was one of the faster, if not the fastest, players I've been around, and Ted. Ted is as fast as any guy I've been around, and I think he may be the fastest in that 60, you know, to 80 to 100 yard range. And he's improved his quickness in his first 5 yards. But this kid can run.
What about Joey Porter? A lot of people were expecting him and Jason Taylor to form a pretty formidable 1-2 punch there on the edge, and yet numbers wise. It hasn't been there for him. He's talked about maybe being in a role that he wasn't accustomed to in Pittsburgh. How would you assess his performance so far?
Well, it's as you know, he missed most of training camp, and there is an adjustment. You know, sometimes we don't want to acknowledge that maybe as much as we should when someone comes from a similar system, but not the same system. There's an adjustment period, but I've seen a lot of growth. In the last few weeks, I think guys on defense still have to be able to be comfortable with playing with each other. Is it what we had envisioned at the beginning? There's other circumstances that have played into that. You know, with Jeremiah Bell and Zach and Vonnie Holiday, and a lot of different things have contributed to the why we're doing what we're doing. So, I've got all the confidence in the world in Dom Capers and his ability to. Need to hammer away and put this unit together where we can play the kind of defense we're accustomed to playing.
Does your experience with Philip Rivers, having him sit behind Drew Brees, did that inform your decision to maybe hold John Beck back this year, or at least until this point?
Well, I think every situation is different because you can have the great plan. You can say, okay, we're going to take a guy named Brady and play him behind Bledsoe, and next thing you know, when you put the guy out there, you know, now that waiting and Tom got to wait for a little while, but all of a sudden he gets thrust in there and bang, you know, you win the Super Bowl. So ideally, time helps, but at some point in time, they got to go in, they got to play, and they got to play at a high level. So I think you just you start with that patient thought process, but you also understand that it's not always going to work out that way. One more, guys, and I got to roll out of here.
When you make a trade with Chambers and you get a draft pick in exchange, does it give you pause in any way to think that how that's going to be received in the locker room, that it could be interpreted as we're, quote-unquote, giving up on this year and looking to the future?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's something that you think about right away, and I made it clear to our team what our approach was. And number one, you know, we've got it's an opportunity for Ted Ginn and Derek Hagan, and we got a lot of confidence in those two guys. And we think the world of Chris Chambers. He's going into a great situation. But in my mind, this move with these two young guys stepping up can help us even get better. I mean, we can now grow even more on offense this season, which is what we knew that's what we need to do to help us win this year. And then the draft pick is the draft pick. I mean, I knew coming in here we're going to build this team through the draft. And that's part of our philosophy, but in no way are we putting this season aside. We're competing, trying to win every football game this season.
Terrific! Thank
you.
All right, guys.
Good luck to you.
All right, guys.